on this side of the tape, I'm going to tape an old fisherman named Sam Revel, who lives on Clark Drive in Panacea, Florida. He's been a fisherman and a farmer and a timber worker and things like that all his life. And he was born in 1900 in Wakulla County, and he's still living in Wakulla County. He's an old-timer, and he's a friend of mine. In fact, some years ago, we fished together for a couple of seasons, which was about the end of his fishing work. He has arthritis pretty bad in his joints and his hands. So on this side of the tape, I want to tape Sam talking about fishing in the Gulf Coast along here and working timber and turpentine and the animals. He's been a hunter all his life, and some other interesting things here, some hurricanes and so forth. So this is Sam Revel, Panacea, Florida. My name is M. Okay, Sam, a question I never asked you before, in all the years I've known you, you never went to school.
Went a little bit, but didn't learn nothing.
Like what, a couple years? A couple
about, winters? About 2 winters, and I had to work.
Did you learn reading and writing?
No.
Do you read and write now?
No.
What's your count?
I just can count anything.
Yeah. But you can read your own name.
Yeah, I read my
name.
And
you can sign your name.
Yeah.
I never asked you that all these years. I figured that you'd had a little schooling. Let's be sure we're getting this tape. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the fishing. I think I've talked to you a lot about that. There's another gentleman sitting here named C.K. Sanders who lives next door to Sam, and he also fished with Sam for years. They're both old-timers, so C.K. may get into this too. Last time we were talking about the number of fish you used to find here when you throw a net. Talk about that some more, please.
Yeah, there used to be plenty of fish here, but now there ain't none.
Yeah.
Plenty of fish. I know me and C.K. both has been right at the ball one day, first one in them bars. That's about half a mile across there.
Yeah.
Plenty of fish, wasn't C.K.?
Yes, sir.
The way they used to fish here, apparently, was when the run was on. Everybody came down here in their wagons and cars and parked right on the beach and stayed until it was over.
Stayed till the men catch fish and come in there and they'd load up and pull out.
Yeah, they'd go on like for a month or so?
Well, a week or two of them caught our wagons still sitting right there on the land at the bay.
Yeah.
Kid reckon all of them running seeing yards, you know. And
yeah, that'd be in the fall then.
Yeah.
Well, what about like crabbing? How'd they used to crab around here?
We had lines, long lines, and bait about 2 foot apart.
Yeah.
And had a run on the boat, and run motor on the side of the boat, run it slow, and just slap them right in the boat to a little boat. I've loaded them many times.
Yeah. But in terms of the mullet, you used to catch like 100,000 pounds heaped up on the beach, something like that? Enormous numbers?
I've seen that one time. I've seen that mullet cool one time, 100,000 pounds. I said it was the biggest pile of fish I've ever seen.
Yeah.
30,000, 40,000. That's about it. Wasn't a CK.
That's still a lot of fish.
That's a lot of fish.
Yeah.
We were in Crewball, 40,000, you know, that's on the Rio one time, you know. And Kid Raker bought them, you know, and split and sold it, every one of them.
That was back before the last war, huh?
Come on in.
It was before the last war.
That would have been in the 30s or something like that.
Yeah, way back. You were speaking about that crabbing to him there a while ago.
Yeah.
Back in them days when Kid Raker and them was catching them fish and he was talking about, there wasn't no crab in here then other than just people catch a few of the crab net each, you know. It, I don't remember just what year it was when this crabbing started here.
Was it after the war?
Yeah, it was
after the Second World War, yeah.
After the Second World War. Virgil Allen, right up here, built a little crab house up there just beside that Standard Station.
Uh-huh.
Up there, and that was, and then when they crab with them lines like he's talking about, and
yeah,
they use this old salted bullnose, and they tie a little loop along about that fur part
yeah
on that line, string it out there in the bay with a buoy, and they had them a flapper, you know. They had them a thing fixed on the back end of the boat. They run a motor and run that line through that and flap them crabs in that way, hanging to that beach. You
know, right, right. Just
with a line. That's what he was trying to tell
you. Yeah. Well, now, that was just like for personal use.
That was commercial use that they were doing. But back before then, they just catch a few with a crab net to fry, fry or boil or clove or something like that. That's when he was talking about.
Well, now, what about shrimping in this area? It's more popular now than it's ever been?
Yes, more popular. There's way younger, more shrimping here now than it used to be.
Yeah. Did you ever shrimp particularly?
No, sir, I never have.
And you did a little bit, sir?
I did a little bit.
Yeah. I remember we did it some there for a while. But it's getting more popular now all the time. Oh, so it's been popular down around Apalachicola for a while, right? And
Caribou,
yeah, where they have the oysters, too. We'll probably get back to fishing, but I had an idea was given to me the other day that I'm interested in talking to. I talked to Otis Voss, the old postmaster, and he was telling me about the turpentine industry that used to be over in Aaron, or here in Wakulla County. He said there was a big thing going on.
Was a big thing, a turpentine was going in a long time ago. Slam across the river where they had barges and bring it in on this side, on barges.
Yeah.
Turpentine.
So it was like, he said there were 3 or 4 mills over there, and turpentine
there was
stills.
One turpentine still up down on the river, one out here in Meadows.
So he said Aaron, however it's pronounced, had a whole bunch of them at one time, because that's where he grew up. Yeah. And then he said the hurricane in 1928 wiped that out. Was that was a bad hurricane around here? Do you remember it?
No,
that was a bad hurricane in Florida.
I don't remember.
Do you remember it, CK? 28?
Yes,
yeah.
I remember it.
What happened around here?
Well, it flooded out just about everything around here, and there's two fellows that lived over here at Spring Creek, Ace and Rafe Vickers, and they were fishermen. And there's out there next to Seven Cabbage on a boat that had named the Old Sam deck there. And they decided to stay out there. The balance of the people all went in, told them, but they were going to stay. And the storm shut down on them, turned the boat over, and drowned both of them. One of them they found right there where the boat turned over, didn't they? And the other one, they found him in there at Purify Creek. In the marsh grass, humped over
John, you know,
in
John.
The grass.
He told us, he said, we're on the boulder looking for him. And he said, turn this way, boys. Turn this way. He says, I see something like a hatchet. And he's coming up just like that. We'd run up there. There he was. That was Ace. So we wouldn't bother. So Rob Meekhead was out there in the boat, too, you know, give Caesar. And Rob come to us. And Rob then pulled him in and brought him right down to the landing. And hunted Rafe all day. Just about this time of day, I reckon. Meaty Johnston, John, and somebody, or Harry, I believe it was on the beach walking, you know, and they went in 30 yards of Rafe, 30 feet of Rafe, I say. And they heard something like a colt. And they stopped. Well, we cut the motor off right then. We was running right along slow with them. Cut it off right then. They called us and thought we heard somebody call. And if they'd have went 30 yards further down there, they'd have found Rafe, but they didn't do it.
You mean he was alive?
Must have been alive. He coughed. They hit him. And we all got in the boat, come on home. And all around the Caraway's boy, what was his name?
Guy
Caraway found him a day or two after that.
Well, you had another good friend, Kid Raker, who died in the storm.
Yeah, I got Kid Raker that died.
So those storms used to be... When they get in here,
bad.
You didn't have any protection. You didn't get any forewarning either, like as much as they do today.
No,
right?
Didn't have the radio and television then, like we got now. Right. And they slip up on us, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was a dangerous life going out there every day on the water in those small boats. I'm sure that.
Well, I'll tell you, right now, Kid would have been all right if he'd stayed at Oklahoma, wouldn't he? But he left Oklahoma, took his niggers, left Oklahoma, and come to that creek where they called the Pole Road. And parked his truck and got out and got away to the creek. And four niggas got drowned and Kid got drowned.
But you don't remember exactly what year that was. Do you know what year that was, CK? That That wasn't 28.
It was the 6th of October, but no, that wasn't in 28. That was in somewhere in the 40s, wasn't it, Sam?
I believe it was.
After the war, maybe.
In Sunderville.
Yeah, it was, let's see, that was after the war, wasn't it,
yeah,
Sam?
Yeah,
I think it was after the war. I know I was living out here.
And me and Lord McGill was camping right at Sunderville, and I told Rob we could went on the Cape that evening. And, you know, it was just a boiling day.
Yeah, now Sam was going to tell you that.
I said, kid, I mean, Rob, let's go to Old Clark. He said, no, boy, that's nothing but a northeaster coming. I said, all right. We went on Cinderella. Well, Will Hartsfield's bunch, they come in there. We had caught about 300-pound fish, me and Rob. We asked them all down. And Will come in there, his bunch, you know, and they asked the day fish about 700-800 pounds down in the steam iceberg. That night, about 1 o'clock, Rob told me before we went to bed, though, he says, boy, he says, get your lantern and set it beside your bed where you can get it. Well, I done just like he said. And about 12 or 1 o'clock, he called me. He said, boy, you awake? I said, yeah. He says, well, get up. Well, all of them wheels, a bunch were there, 6 or 7 of them, you know. And they jumped up, too, and we all tried to get out of there. And Lord have mercy, I know since it's the thing in my life, water's breaking over them, over that little hill. And that water got this deep to
just
us
deep.
Over that hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And we held the trees till daylight.
Just look at you all.
Just look.
It happens real quick, yeah. Of course, just a couple of years ago, the water came up here on Clark Drive under your house, but that was a real quick, and then it was over with. Have there been other bad hurricanes in here? Those were two you mentioned.
Yeah, there's been some pretty bad ones.
Yeah, right through here.
Yeah.
Of course, they come down the coast a little bit every year. Mississippi gets them, Louisiana and Texas. In the 20s there was a hurricane that wiped out Florida pretty bad all over the state. That might have been 28. That was the one that caused a lot of trouble everywhere. I think it hit 3 or 4 places in the state.
It was a bad storm, but that was a bad
maybe it was, may I? It was one of those. I'm not sure exactly, you know.
Miss May, do you remember the one, what year it was when...
Kid Raker died?
Kid Raker got drowned.
Was that after the war, you think?
No, I don't remember the year.
It was the 6th of October, you know, when it happened.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember that.
That's late for a hurricane, yeah.
Well, Mark, get your chair, son, and sit down. You only got to go. Well, you need stuff with me.
Okay, let's see. I want to talk a little more, maybe about hunting. You've both been hunters all your life. I asked you one time, Sam, you said the biggest bear you'd ever seen was a couple hundred pounds?
I believe what?
And the biggest deer you've ever seen around here is a couple hundred pounds.
Yes, we weighed 2 or 3 deer and weighed about 180 pounds apiece.
Yeah, but the biggest hogs you've seen weigh a lot more than that, right?
Yeah.
They get fat. That hog of 400 pounds has got to be pretty big.
I believe I caught one, me and Benny Maycare, with 300 pounds. I believe that old big list of barter weighed 300 pounds.
The one you couldn't get in your truck?
Couldn't load it.
Yeah, right. You finally caught something you couldn't load. What about you, CK? What about hunting with you? Were you a hunter? You were a hunter, right?
I've done quite a bit of hunting.
Yeah.
Of course, I've never killed no bear in my life. I've known people kill them. I've killed a few deer, not many.
The bear were never too frequent around here then.
And the biggest deer I ever killed was an 8-point.
Yeah?
I don't know how much he weighed. I didn't weigh him.
How much you estimate?
Well, I figured that he would weigh, say, at least 175, 80 pounds, something like that.
How high?
One of my boys and another boy killed one 11-point. Now, I'm satisfied he weighed 200 pounds. Right close to it. He would have been close to it. He's 11 point. But
well, your boys used to hunt alligators, as I remember.
Yeah.
In fact, I've heard...
I have, too.
Yeah, I've heard him tell a lot of stories about that. That was when you got, what, a certain amount of dollars for each hide?
That's right. A long war delay of this gator hunting. That boys of mine, one of them finally got in the gang about it. But for a while, they was letting us hunt them, well, then they put in the stockers. They wasn't doing nothing about it. And them hides got to where along towards the last of a 3-foot hide was $15 and $16 a piece for a 3-foot gator.
Mm-hmm.
A 6'5 and 6-foot gator was, you get anywhere around 25, 27 for a 5-foot, and about 30 for a 6-foot hide.
So it was worth it to go out there.
Oh yes, there was money in it. That's what the reason they were
born. Maybe 7 foot and got $3 for that. Being a 7-foot and got $3.
That's a long time ago, yeah. But now the law is so strict that nobody hunts, I guess. It's just automatic.
They won't let no nothing. The only way you can kill them now, the way I understand it, that if one's balling somebody or in a lake or something where it's dangerous, you know, the game department, the way I understand it, you report it to the game department, and they go kill it for you.
Or try to move it, I guess.
Or move it. Yeah, kill it or move it.
So they just automatically put you on the gang now if you hunt an alligator.
They get you if they can.
Yeah.
Some of them gets into it every once in a while trying to bootleg because they worth so much money. I don't know how much they worth now. But I imagine a tremendous in price now, way on the higher than they were then.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any close escapes with gators when you were hunting?
One time, me and my daddy was hunting, and we was hunting alligators with headlights, and was going along up river. I know that this gator was planning on attacking us because I had a good headlight. I was doing the shining, he was pushing along, you know. And directly I throw, it wasn't too bright a light back in them days. And I seen something over the side of the boat, and the tide was rising, and we was going with the tide. And I noticed it. At first, I thought maybe it was an old chunk, but I noticed I could see that tail as it wagged that way, you know. And I called Pa, and I said, "Pa," I said, "I just seen a gator right there." He said, "Where?" I said, "Right there." He said, "Did you see his eye?" I said, "No, I see the pure gator." Oh, he said, "That was a chump." I said, "A chump drifting again the tide." So he left up the boat. And in just a few minutes, he bubbled under the bottom of the boat, you know. And I turned the light over that way, and his head was turned back the other way. And still no eye. I said, "That looked like his head now." And when I said that looked like his head, he opened that eye, and down he went. Well, he got right back under that boat again. He had you know, right under that boat. Wreck of that died out. Well, we kept shining all around out there looking, you know, seeing if we were going to see eye to eye anywhere. No gator, no worms, no bubbling on the boat. So we drifted off up the river a little way. And I told him, I said, "Just turn the boat around. Maybe he stopped right there where he done that bubbling on the boat." So he turned the boat back around that way, and I grunted like another gator to him. Man, that thing come up out of that water, and here he comes, you know. You can see all under his neck here, you know. Well, I just got my light ready and my gun. He just held the boat straight. Just before his head bumped by the boat, I fired. Busted his head over an 8-foot gator. Now, that gator was intending on attacking us because some way or another, now he was navigating and keeping that eye closed where it wouldn't shine. And my granddaddy, over here on James Island at the Fair Pond, you know where it is. Years ago, I've heard him tell that. Said that he got in there one night, he had him a little old boat, he made him a little old block wheel wagon. There wasn't no carts and things then, you know, and pulled it out there by hand, put it in there. And he said one got after him that way and said, "That thing would go on the boat this way, and when he come up over there, he'd throw his gun over there to shoot, and by that time he's up on this side." And the first one way and then the other, and he just couldn't shoot that gator. Finally, he shoved that little old boat up to an old tussock that was tied around, you know, and crawled out on that tied-eyed tussock and left boat and gator and all. And that gator was attacked.
I heard Dwight tell a story one time about 10 years ago. He
was slipped or something. He was in the pond and the gator was coming after him. He slipped, turned around, he just killed him before the gator got him. It was a story, something like that.
He probably did. They will attack you. Now it's dangerous.
Me and Roy was wading along about that deep water catching soft shell turtles. And stepped on a big soft shell turtle, fixing to get him, and here come one 9-footer. With his mouth wide open, and I just shoved a gun barrel right down his throat. Pow! That's all in the world saved Roy. He'd have caught Roy, sure.
So what'd you get, a couple dollars for his hide, bro?
I don't know. Now it's been so long.
Then I imagine maybe a dollar or $1.60 or something for a big hide like that.
Old man coming out, both half brother. And one of his boys come along in an old Model T car. And we all grabbed that thing and pulled him out, and they hooked him on behind that thing and told him up that house.
But in those years, you weren't eating the tail, right? No, hardly anybody around was eating tail. What's the first time you ever heard anybody eating alligator tail around here?
I tried some one time, but I ain't never tried no more.
What'd it taste like?
I didn't like it.
What'd it taste like?
Gator to me.
Yeah? Was it tough?
No.
Well, it wasn't too tough, but it just didn't taste right to me.
Well, my boy. Juanita, and she said it was delicious. She loves it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try some sometime.
And I am too, if I
eat
there
one. Well, now I can tell you, if you want to try some. Now these boys of mine told me I've seen them eat it a lot. I can tell you how to do it, and it's all right according to what they say. There's a muscle in their tail, right back close to the hind leg. Inside there's a kind of cover that way. That was says. 7-8 footer would be up about the size of my arm, but you can cut that in there, and there's a long white muscle that there ain't no fat in, no fatty tissue at all.
Yeah.
And you can cut that out and slice it up. I've seen them boys of mine eat. Now, I had got stuck on, I just cut off a piece of the tail and fried it, and it's got little tissues of fat skirts in it, you know. And that gator fat, I can't stand the scent of it. And that's what that tasted like. But now, them boys, they say it's good.
It sounds like a pork roast. It looks like it to me. It's a little round hunk of muscle there.
They really, I've known a lot of people eating that muscle out of their tail.
Okay, there was something else interesting to me. The woman that's talking on here is May, Sam's wife, May Revel. I want to talk to you a little bit about the changes you've seen in your lifetime. You're both... all three of you were born around the turn of the century, I guess, within a few years of it. So when you were born, automobiles were very scarce, right?
Yes,
Sam, you remember the first car you ever saw?
Yes, first one I ever seen in my life, a mail carrier was driving.
The U.S. government?
Yeah. Mail carrier.
Would have been Ford, right?
Run by chains.
Chain drive.
Yeah.
What about you, C.K.? Remember the first car?
I believe these Taft fellas, Beatty Taft, I believe, owned the first car I ever saw.
What was it? Truck?
Model T Ford.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember when there wasn't no cars, right? And I'm not very old, 66 years old, going on 67. And...
So everybody had either walked or they used
That's
horses?
That's right. Everybody walked then or had a mule wagon or an ox and a cart. That's the way
so
we had it.
Those first cars used all the mule trails, of course. It was hard to get a car around down here.
We used to have, my granddaddy used to have an old bay-colored mule. And she was a good work mule, but she was the foolishest thing in the world. I'll never forget it. And, of course, they were just old dirt roads then, you know. That thing was scared of a car. When you heard a car coming, you had to get out and get a hold of a tree with that rope, you know, and hold her, then she'd run away with the wagon. And you could drive her through a branch where one of them cars went through there and left a little out of oil on the wall. You'd have a time with it. That car just went. Man, she was scared.
She didn't like cars, yeah. What's the first car you ever saw, man? But you remember you saw it?
I remember.
You were a little girl.
Yeah, a little girl.
It was coming down the road. Everybody probably stood out there and looked at it, yeah.
No, my daddy got real sick, and it was a doctor in Tallahassee, Dr. Palmer, that owned it. But I remember the kind of lights they had was carbide.
Yeah. Were you living in Medard?
No, we was living up on Old Clock in the River.
Uh-huh. So he came all the way down to take care of your dad?
All the way from Tallahassee up there.
You'd remember that? Yeah.
So, I was just a little old thing, though.
So what about the first roads that were paved down here? What was the first road paved like? What was it paved with? Just rock, gravel? Remember anything?
The first road down in this part of Wauwatosa County, this main highway up there, what do you call that? And that's not this one that goes through right through him, but the other one goes around the top of the They put rock on it first. Don't you remember that, Sam? I worked up here in Crawfordville. They hauled it in here in boxcar, and they had an old steam shovel. What it was, a drag line steam shovel, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
To dip that there rock out of them cars, and they put that rock on part of it. It went over here to Shell Hammock.
I worked at Shell Hammock.
And took some barges, you know, and went in there and got a bunch of that shell, and they shelled a lot of it down there, the other side of Sock Chop, and some of it over on the island.
Well, that was from Tallahassee down to the coast. And then they ran that highway down the coastal ways, probably.
I can remember when there wasn't no highway here at all, nary one.
Right there, indeed. I worked down here at this place where they give them shell a long time.
Yeah.
Stanberry and that. James Crawford was there. I believe it was the man.
Well, what about the first airplane you ever saw up close? When was that long? When was that? Anybody remember that?
Well, I don't remember just how long that's been, but the first one I saw pretty right up close to it was up in Tallahassee, that old airport out there. I went up there one day and watched a fellow fly around there. I mean, another fellow was about drunk, you know. We going to go out and get him tickets up to a ride.
That's when they used to take you up for a couple dollars, right? Yeah.
We got talking about finally, some women got drunk and said, where you going to go? I said, no, I'm going to go. How about you? Get me in there and tie me and put me in there. So we didn't go to ride here. I'm still scared of them. I don't know.
Matey, if you got anything to say, just get into it, honey, okay? Listen, we're going to send this tape to the Stephen Foster Center. They're doing a lot of folklore over in Suwannee River. But I think we'll try to get this tape back. This one sounds like we'll be able to hear it. What about your first radio sets? Did you have crystal sets when you were growing up? What about... You didn't have little crystal sets? What's the first radio set you remember? When about? Around here. That would have come out of Tallahassee, I guess.
Yeah.
I believe that the first thing that I remember owning, I lived over here at Buckhorn, and it was in the beginning of World War II. It was a battery set. You had to put you up a pole out there, you know. For an antenna, run your wire up on it. And it was a battery set.
And you picked up Tallahassee?
Yeah, and you could pick up Gainesville. And you could pick up quite a few places with that long air, that wire.
Yeah. So this was pretty remote down here then for a long time. It still is, actually, but it's changing fast now. But if radio was that recent. Did you work, there was an army camp during World War II down in Caribel Card, Camp Gordon Johnson. Sam Revel worked there for briefly, a year or so. Did you work there, C.K.?
I worked there. I drove a truck down there for a pretty good while, hauling mud, one thing, building them streets, mucking them.
Well, that was the rare thing about that, I guess, is it paid cash wages. There weren't many cash wage employers around here, were there, when you were growing up?
I don't remember just what they paid, but it was
they paid
a pretty good price, better than we had ever made anything.
If I got driving checks, 75 cents an hour.
And that was a lot of money in those days.
That was a big money.
Cash, yeah.
Yeah, they'd pay cash.
Yeah.
Yes,
sir. And that was steady.
75 cents an hour.
That's about as much as I make now.
And I carried a bunch of folks to work every morning, you know, at night, bring them back home. They gave me my gas bill. It was about my gas bill they gave me, you know. Well, I got 75 cents right on, you know, but they gave me gas bill for hauling back and forth.
Yeah. So you did all right.
I done pretty good.
Yeah.
Was it 75 cents an hour?
Mm-hmm. 75 cents an hour.
Well, I have worked, and I know you have, back down the line. I told them boys about it, and they just can't hardly accept it now. But I sold logs with another fellow one time for $1.65 a day. with a crosscut saw. Yeah. And look what the people get for an hour's work now.
Yeah. I have walked from the old clean house to Aaron Station and get $1.10 a day and walk back at night. That may be what ailed me now, walking up.
You ain't doing so bad for your age, Sam. You ain't no kid no more. The way of life has changed around here so much. I think that's what anyone would notice if you lived here a while. You can see it's only been like one generation or one man's life when there were no appliances. Everything was done by hand, and now, of course, you're into the electronic age when everything is done completely by machine and computer. But what do you think this did in terms of changing people? That would be interesting. What the way people live now as compared to the way people lived when you were kids?
Well, the way people live now, they got anything they want. And long when we as kids coming up, we didn't have nothing. Ain't that right?
Not very much. No.
You think they're happier now?
Well, I don't know whether they're any happier or not. It seemed to me like that the people way back there then, though they didn't have the convenience that we have now, and things has improved. We got more than we've ever had. But you'd hear the old fishermen then. I've been out there many night in the bay, and just for a day you'd hear them. They had to pull boat. They didn't have oars, you know. Didn't have no motor. And you'd hear them just a hollering and singing for a day. So it seemed like, you know, you don't ever hear that now if you're out there.
Now you hear the motor now, that's all you hear.
The
engines,
motor,
everything
right.
Is mechanics now,
but
that's right.
It seemed like they didn't have much, but they didn't worry too much because they noticed they made a living. That was good enough.
What about music? Do you remember a lot of music when you were growing up around, like homemade music?
Not too much.
What about church? That was where music was at?
Church. What? I don't think they had much music.
Mostly sing, and they'd have an old organ or a piano or something like that. Mostly an old organ way back down.
Yeah. Did they have traveling preachers with music? Revival shows? Did they come
through? Hardly ever. I think they just the church, you know, church group would sing, so to speak. They didn't have what they call choirs now.
Well,
they just gather together and sing, and somebody play the organ. You know?
Well, were there any people around here who were particularly noted as being musicians who played a lot? There were a few, I suspect.
A few. My daddy was, he could play a fiddle.
Yeah.
But now, he never did play in no churches or nothing like that.
Yeah.
But
are there any old-timers living around now that you know of who played music in those years? You know, they'd be older men now, or women.
I don't remember none around. Most of them that did, I think they did.
Yeah. But there was a lot of singing. Singing was the music.
Singing, mostly.
And some work singing, too.
People used to holler and sing, work, holler and sing. It's over with now.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't never hear that now. Yeah. If you see a bunch of fellas out working, you don't ever hear no singing.
Not a bit.
Hardly.
Yeah, it makes it work easier. I know that. Yeah. Of course, you know I love to sing, so I think about that.
He was telling you about this turpentine business. I can remember way back down the line when these niggers would be out in the woods, you know, chipping boxes and dipping boxes. They cut a box in the tree, you know, back in them days, and they had what they called dip arm.
Dip arm.
Sam, I know you remember this. And you hear them old niggers beating that old barrel out there,
yeah,
you know,
all
morning, beat a tune on that old barrel out there in piney woods, you know.
Well, they probably made music was important to them too. It
that's
always
right.
Has been, yeah. I suspect that they're still making some music in their own way.
It seems like a nigger gets more out of it.
He do. He
yeah.
do. Yes, he do. He sure gets more. And he can take that old diff horn and beat a few tune on that barrel. This is pretty tune you ever hear in your life.
But I love good sacred music better than beefsteak. I really like
so you go to the revival meetings around here now when you can.
Sometimes
yeah, you go a lot too, May, don't
yeah.
you? There's a lot of music at night when you
yeah.
go to church. Yeah. It's the music. I love it too.
Yeah.
I listen every day on the radio now to the
yeah.
Christian singing. Though I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good music.
It is. There's some people on there that really.
I saw a truck the other day down the road. It was somebody's traveling.
some traveling gospel band, traveling gospel singers. They were moving around.
And I'm so glad that they did. I'm always behind.
Yeah, well, the church has always been pretty important down here. It's been one of the few. It's been one of the few social things in these places where you didn't have much of a town, right? It's where you could get people would come together at church.
Give him a chair.
He's gonna hurt the porch.
Rode pretty hard, didn't you? I just listening today over the radio. There's a bunch gonna be in Tallahassee this Friday night, I think it is. These quartets and ones there. If you wanna hear something, it'll make it happen.
Yeah, I'd like to go out and tape some of the church music around Florida. There's still some good singing left. I'd like to take a tape recorder and go out and get the permission of the people, you know. I'm sure there's a lot of good music.
There's some good singing in these churches, yeah. I can tell you where there's some folk that used to. There's Friendship Church up in Meadow. And, of course, Corey White's dead now, but there's a few good singers there right on. Go there to church, and they really do some real good singing there, to my opinion. Of course, I guess they do it all these churches around.
They have good singing down here. This old church, I mean, good singing.
Mm-hmm. I remember they've had revival meetings right now.
I love to hear My Lord of Mercy. I love to hear that song. I can't walk without Jesus. I can't talk without Jesus. That's the prettiest song I've ever heard in my life.
Down here last week, Mac. They had a revival and good music.
Where
singing
at?
Down here at the
Solis
Church.
Is that right? Yeah. I haven't been in a long time here, May. I suppose I should go again.
You ought to go.
Yeah, well, I love the music.
Well, they ain't on your level. You ought to go get salvation.
Well, I might get too much salvation.
No,
Sam.
You won't get too much.
You won't get too much?
No, you won't get too much, I'll tell you that. Start with right now, you won't never get too much.
I thought it might stunt my growth if I got too much.
You won't stop nothing about you. You do good.
Is that right? I might try it.
Ain't on my touch, you ought to do it.
Well, we're working up to it, Sam.
I'll tell you right now, my dear boy, it'll make a changed man out of you. You better go.
Well, I don't know if I want to do that. I've been through enough changes already, Sam. I'd have to go through the whole thing all over again.
If you live and have your right mind, you go to die if you don't do it, you're going to think of what I told you right there.
All right. Don't put it on me too heavy now.
I can tell you something, just throw in something that happened to me. Now, I've lived a rugged life back down the line, because in some ways I drank and I used a lot of words that I ought not. But I got saved one night, and I could write my name scarcely, and I couldn't read. I went to school a lot, but I never did study like a fellow ought to. And when the Lord saved me, I had to study that word. And I can read that word, and I can memorize scripture in better than some preachers that's got a good education. And
sure
good Lord, the good Lord taught me. I just couldn't stay away from it. I don't know how many times I try to read it there at the house. I'd go across to Young's, there wasn't no houses over there in the woods, and pray a little while and come back. I just couldn't get away from that Bible. I just had to study until I learned to read the Bible. And I love to read it now. It gets me a lot of times sitting around reading. And I learned what reading out now. I can read the newspaper. There's some words that I can't pronounce. And some words in the scriptures that I can't pronounce correctly. But I learned to read. And what reading I learned it from the Holy Bible.
That's an interesting story, CK. Yeah, that's interesting. Mate, you went to church, school, right? You learned to read in school, right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting story, CK. What about preachers? Have there been any really good preachers in this area that you stand out in your mind? You know?
Yeah.
Here for a long time?
Yeah, there's been some good.
Yeah.
Sure have.
Lived around here. Of course.
No, they didn't live right around here, but there's been some, well, there's some pretty good ones lived around here, but
yeah.
There's been one or two come around down here, one up in Carville, what's his name? It come and preached. That little fellow near that boy or Clancy went back with. What's that little Tommy?
Well, he live around here.
And I said he didn't live around. He lived in Holster. Yeah, that's a good preacher, dude.
Yeah, he's good, huh?
Yes, he sure is.
Well, the tradition around here was to have people who worked take the pulpit sometimes, right? Every now and then a layman would get up and preach. Is that true? I've seen some of that. In other words, sometimes they didn't have a regular preacher. It would be just somebody who was into the Bible and who felt like talking.
What do you think about a fellow like me that didn't have no education? And why fishing over here at the harbor with a fellow? And one night, I suspicion that God had his hand called. And I dreamed for preaching. And I prayed and I said, Lord, if it's your will, fix the place and the time. So I come on home and went to church. And I was hoping, because I knew there was going to be a crowd there. I was afraid that I was going to be called on. And I just started off. And I got way back in the back of the church where the preacher lived over here at St. Mark's. And when it come time for the service, there wasn't no preacher there. I began to get more nervous because I figured that God, that was the time that he prepared. So after a while, they seen he wasn't going to come, and the deacon come back there and said, well, sir, we got a young man here that's just fired off. So we'll have to use him tonight, I reckon, and I'm telling you, the Spirit of God lifted me, seemed like all that banished about it. I went on up that aisle. It was in July, August. I don't remember just which now. And I had on a white shirt. Praise God. And when I got up there to preach, I wanted to say just a few little words, you know, and close my Bible and hush, afraid that I said something wrong, you know. And I start to close that Bible, and he'd just come down and just shake me. And I preached until the sweat was dripping out of them shirt sleeves before I could get off of that platform. I couldn't get off of it.
That's another girl was right there with you.
Every person they was in that building that night was dead. Now, it weren't me. I didn't want to do it. It was God's Spirit. Mm-hmm. I walked by a lady. She sat in the chair and shook hands with me. She says, I have felt the Spirit of God greater tonight than I ever felt it in my life. I says, I know what you're talking about. God is real, and he wants to save everybody. I was talking to my little girl up yonder the other day about people preaching about the love of God, Jesus Christ. Went to his own, you know, and preached to them and worked with them. And they refused him in Jerusalem. And the scripture said that he stood on the outskirts of Jerusalem and wept over it and said, how often would I gather you as a hen would gather a brood under a wing? But you would not. They rejected him. They refused him. He offered them that love. He's offering that love to every man now. He wants you under his wing. He wants me under his wing. He wants everybody. His love is extended, but you have to accept it. You can reject it. And that's what they done. And in World War II, look what happened. My Lord. I read that. I think you'll find it in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy, in the old scripture, where the things happened that he prophesied to them would happen if they rejected him. And they done it. They lined them up and shot them. He said he would send a nation that would have no mercy on your children or on your women or on your gray head. I think the Russians, I believe it was some of the Russians when they were having that war with that day, some of the Germans in Russia, that they lined up and mowed them down with machine guns.
Well, that happened a lot, actually.
And they hauled them to furnaces and exterminated them in one way or another. That was because of the rejection of Christ. Now, according to my understanding of the scriptures in Deuteronomy, That was that scripture in Deuteronomy being fulfilled. The rejection of the Messiah. Here not many months ago I was down here. It's been a year or so ago now. At leaving, and I was listening to the radio and listening to an old preacher preach, and it stumped me, thinking about everybody going to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was a wonderful Christian place. And he says, I've been there many times. He says, you know there's less than 300 converted Jews in Jerusalem. It stumped me, I think, and said, well, never would I have thought that. That thought shows.